what extent did that come up, like to further strengthen?
Well, there's not a lot left to sanction from our part. I mean, we hit their major oil companies, which is what everybody's been asking for. Obviously, those have to be implemented, and it'll take some time to begin to feel it. But, you know, I mean, I don't know what more there is to do. I mean, we're running out of things to sanction
shadow
in that
fleet.
Regard. Well, shadow fleet is an enforcement mechanism, and obviously sanctions have to be enforced. So, you know, we don't put sanctions and then not enforce them. We're interested in enforcing them as well. So, but that's more of an enforcement matter. And shadow fleet has come up because I do think there are things that the Europeans can do on shadow fleet, since a lot of these are happening in areas much closer to them. That's why we've been in discussions with them about defensive weapons to be able to protect their grid. And I know we've been in ongoing technical conversations about the specific equipment they need. But ultimately, if that equipment is ultimately destroyed a week later after it's installed, that remains a problem. And that's been the history of the last 2 or 3 years.
This is my video update on this Thursday afternoon, November the 13th, coming to you from Larnaca, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And the big story that we have to talk about first is the release of 20,000 pages of Epstein documents and email messages. And in these documents, these 20,000 pages, Trump's name appears about 1,500 times. But all of those times Trump's name appears, or a majority of the times Trump's name appears. Oh, why am I having a hard time with that? The majority of the times, it's just referencing Trump in some sort of a news story or a statement that he made or a post on social media. Now, there are three emails of those 1,500 times mentioning Trump. There are three email messages where you have Ghislaine Maxwell and Epstein talking about Trump, and you have Michael Wolff, the author and someone who absolutely despises Trump. He's the guy that wrote the book during Trump's first term. Fire and Fury, that smeared Trump. Was it Fire and Fury, or was it Fists of Fury? No, Fists of Fury was Bruce Lee. Fists of Fury. Now, Fire and Fury, I believe, was the name of his book that its purpose was to smear Trump. This guy does not like Trump, this Wolf guy. And he was communicating with Epstein, which is weird. Why is Michael Wolff, this guy, this journalist, why is he communicating with Epstein? Anyway, there are three messages which are interesting. I believe one of them is actually worth discussing. I think the other two are pretty much meaningless. The Michael Wolff communications with Epstein, I'm not taking those too seriously. Actually, one of the emails between Wolff and Epstein is just straight up blackmail. They're just talking about how to blackmail Trump, right? In the email communication, Wolff and Epstein are talking about some, I believe, a CNN interview or something like that Trump's gonna give. And CNN is going to ask Trump about Epstein, and then they're talking about, well, if Trump is asked whether he knows you or whether he's been to the island or to the house or whatever, then you should let him hang himself. Let him answer and let him hang himself. Or maybe you can use it as leverage to get favors from him. I mean, just straight up blackmail, man. I mean, there's nothing else to say about that message, to be quite honest. Let me see if I have it. I do have it bookmarked, but I have to zoom in. Yeah, from Michael Wolff to jeevacation@gmail. That's Jeffrey Epstein. And the message says, so this is from Michael Wolff. I think you should let him hang himself. If he says he hasn't been on the plane or to the house, then that gives you a valuable PR and political currency. You can hang him in a way that potentially generates a positive benefit for you. Or if it really looks like he could win, you could save him, generating a debt. Of course, it is possible that, when asked, he'll say Jeffrey is a great guy and has gotten a raw deal and is a victim of political correctness, which is to be outlawed in a Trump regime. Blackmail, man, that's what this is. So the message from Wolf to Epstein that started this communication was, I hear CNN is planning to ask Trump tonight about his relationship with you, either on air or in Scrum afterwards. And then Epstein replies, if we were able to craft an answer for him, what do you think it should be? And that's where Michael Wolf then replies to Epstein, I think you should let him hang himself, and everything I just read to you. So that's the one message that everyone is talking about. Okay, so these guys are talking about how to extract favors or leverage from Trump, right? The other message between Wolf and Epstein is about Epstein being kicked out of Mar-a-Lago, right? And Epstein claims that he was asked by Trump to resign his membership, I guess, at Mar-a-Lago. And Epstein claims that he was never a member, right? And I think that's false. I think that Epstein was a member of Mar-a-Lago, if there is such a thing. I believe I read somewhere that you are a member. Yeah, you're a member of Mar-a-Lago to go to, like, the events. And I believe Epstein was a member, and I do believe, I could be wrong about this, but I do believe that Trump kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago. I mean, I know he's on record saying he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago, but I don't know if that meant that he revoked some sort of a membership or something like that. And the reason that Trump gave for kicking Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago is because he wanted Epstein to stop, Epstein and Ghislaine to stop recruiting. And actually, the email says as much. The email between Wolf and Epstein says that Trump wanted him and Ghislaine to stop, right? To stop their activities. It actually says, Trump said he asked me to resign, never a member, ever. Of course, he knew about the girls as he asked Ghislaine to stop. So he asked Ghislaine to stop the recruiting. So that's the second email between Trump and between Wolf and Epstein referencing Trump. Now, the email between Ghislaine and Epstein was sent by Ghislaine, gmax1@lmax.com. lmax.com is Ghislaine Maxwell's company. She registered the domain. Lmax.com, and that's a holding company that she has. And Gmax, obviously, is Ghislaine Maxwell. And she sent an email to Epstein. Actually, Epstein sent an email to Ghislaine Maxwell where he said, I want you to realize that dog that has barked is Trump. Redacted victim spent hours at my house with him. He has never once been mentioned, police chief, etc. I'm 75% there. And then Ghislaine responds to Epstein saying, I have been thinking about that. Now, the redacted victim, many people believe that the redacted victim is Virginia Giuffre, which also is interesting because during her case against Ghislaine Maxwell, she testified that Trump had done nothing wrong with regards to the whole Epstein thing. She's on record basically saying that Trump didn't do anything wrong with regards to Epstein. One second. Technofog actually researched this. As attorney and researcher, Technofog points out, the emails reference Epstein victim Virginia Giuffre, who explicitly denied Trump did anything wrong. Giuffre was deposed in November 2016 as part of her lawsuit against Ghislaine Maxwell. You can read excerpts from her deposition here. Giuffre was asked specific questions about Donald Trump, his familiarity with Epstein, whether Trump committed any wrongdoing, etc., and Giuffre cleared Trump. Here are the relevant excerpts from a discussion about Giuffre's previous interview with a reporter. Okay. So he was hours at the house, according to this email exchange. and the victim's name is redacted, but that's Jafri. But in 2016, Jafri, according to Technofog, it's on record. It's on record, so this is accurate. She cleared Trump of any wrongdoing. So anyway, those are the three email messages that a lot of people are talking about. Trump should just release all of this stuff, man. Just release it all. We're going to get it anyway, right? It's going to get released by the Democrats, and they're going to release it slowly, slowly, or maybe quickly, quickly. I don't know. But they're going to frame the narrative because they're going to have control of the release. They're going to do it in a way that frames it very badly for Trump, right? And they're going to leak certain parts to the media that they're going to want to leak to the media so that they can create the narrative that Trump was up to no good with Epstein. And maybe he was. Maybe he was. But if you are clean and clear of any wrongdoing, then release all the files, man. Just release them. He should have done it back in the summer. Instead, you had this Cash Patel saying nothing happened, or he did kill himself, or whatever Cash Patel said. You had Bongino saying the same thing, and then you had Pam Bondi, and then you had Trump saying this is some sort of a Democrat witch hunt. What a disaster, man, for Trump. What a disaster. His presidency is unraveling because of this Epstein thing. The Epstein thing back in the summer, that kicked off all of Trump's troubles that he has been undergoing for the past 4 or 5 months. Yeah, he should just release everything, man. Release it all. Release all of it. If you have nothing to fear or nothing to hide, right? Or if you're not protecting someone, well, maybe he's protecting someone, right? That's also a possibility. Maybe he's been told not to release these documents or else in order to protect certain people. I don't know. But anyway, that's the Epstein news. Trump actually posted on Truth Social. The Democrats are trying to bring up the Jeffrey Epstein hoax again because they'll do anything at all to deflect on how badly they've done on the shutdown and so many other subjects. Only a very bad or stupid Republican would fall into the trap. The Democrats cost our country $1.5 trillion with their recent antics of viciously closing our country while at the same time putting many at risk, and they should pay a fair price. There should be no deflections to Epstein or anything else, and any Republicans involved should be focused only on opening up our country and fixing the massive damage caused by the Democrats. Okay, the country's now open again. It's open until January 30th. That was signed by Trump yesterday. So the government shutdown is over. But he needs to stop with this Democrat hoax stuff. Just stop, man. Stop. Stop trying to say this is a Democrat hoax. Just stop it. Stop it and release all the freaking files. Release them all. That's the best thing he can do for the country and for his presidency, to be honest. Just my thoughts on that. And there's also a Russian angle to these email releases, which is a nothing burger, in my opinion, but they're trying to spin some sort of a Russian angle to all of this. And there was emails released by Epstein, where he claims that he was in touch with the former ambassador to the United Nations, Churkin, who passed away, actually. And he wanted to discuss Trump with him to give him some consultation and some advice on Trump. Actually, I think he did give him some advice on Trump. Churkin, yeah. And Epstein said Churkin was great. He understood Trump after our conversation. It's not complex. He must be seen to get something. It's that simple. Okay, so that's one exchange. And then he He tried to score a meeting with Lavrov ahead of the Putin-Trump meeting in Helsinki during his first term in 2018. And he was sending a message to the former, I believe the former prime minister of Norway, Thorbjørn Jagland, right? And who is also, who was also leading the Council of Europe at the time. And he wanted to get a meeting with Lavrov or pass a message over to Lavrov. I think you might suggest to Putin that Lavrov can get insight on talking to me. Epstein wrote June 24th, 2018 in an email to Jagland. So that's the Russian angle. In all of this, if there even is an angle, the exchange was among dozens that showcase Epstein's extraordinary network of international associates, whom he often corresponded with about Trump's first-term policy decisions. Doesn't sound like he really talked to the Russians much about Trump's foreign policy decisions. He seems to have had a conversation with the former UN ambassador, and he tried to score some kind of a meeting or communication with Lavrov, which it looks like he did not get. I'm pretty sure the Russians understood exactly who Epstein was, right? I think the Russians understood, and they probably kept the distance from Epstein and didn't pay much attention to him chasing them around for some sort of a meeting. Anyway, that's the first big story for today. The second big story is this scandal that is unfolding in Ukraine. The Energoatom energy scandal, $100 million in kickbacks to this energy company. And much of Zelensky's inner circle is implicated in this investigation conducted by Naboo. Naboo. It's a nice castle, by the way. Very nice castle. The corruption agency set up by the collective West. The collective West set up this independent agency to stamp out corruption in Ukraine. Corruption that they don't approve of, right? The corruption that they approve of, Naboo, stay away. Don't bother with that stuff. But the corruption that we do not approve of, well, then you guys have to investigate it. But anyway, it's $100 million, man, in kickbacks. $100 million, the Spectator is saying. The scandal that can bring down Volodymyr Zelensky. This is coming from the UK Spectator. Very big fans of Zelensky, the Spectator. Owen Matthews, once a very big fan of Zelensky. Seems that he's now turned on Zelensky. He's not so happy with Zelensky. Let's see. The unfolding corruption scandal sent new shockwaves across the Ukrainian political landscape on Wednesday when Justice Minister Yerman Galushchenko, closely followed by Energy Minister Svetlana Krinchuk, tendered their resignations. Yeah, so his government, Zelensky's government, is starting to crumble. He has two resignations, and now they are saying that Umerov, the one-time defense minister, I think now his position is head of the Security Council or something like that. The rumors are that Umerov may have to step down as well. Mindich, Timur Mindich. The main guy implicated in this scandal, he was Zelensky's buddy. Hard to tell if he still is Zelensky's buddy. He was Zelensky's buddy and associate, and they worked on projects together, and they had businesses together. And Mindich, he had some involvement in Firepoint, which was this entertainment scouting company, which then managed to manufacture drones. How does that happen? How do you have an entertainment scouting agency and you pivot to manufacturing drones? How does that work? How in God's name does that work? I don't know. But they scored a $1 billion drone contract. The New York Times detailed this in an article that they put out about two weeks ago. Anyway, Mindich was or is involved in Firepoint. And Firepoint denies all of this, by the way. They deny all of these allegations. But this Mindich guy, he is actually the person, and he's the ringleader in all of this, according to Nabu. Allegedly, he's the ringleader in this $100 million kickback scandal. And he's the guy that introduced Alensky to Kolomoisky, man. Can you guys believe it? Mindich, according to Politico, is the man who introduced Alensky to Igor Kolomoisky, who then made Alensky, right? Servant of the people, the TV series, and then the political party as Alensky rose to the presidency. And then Alensky put Kolomoisky in prison. I was thinking that maybe what Alensky is doing here with this 100 million Energe Atom scandal is that, in much the same way that he got rid of Kolomoisky, right, tying up some loose ends, and he got rid of Kolomoisky and put him in prison, I was thinking maybe he's doing the same here. Maybe he's the one that is behind this investigation, and he's trying to get rid of any loose ends that might be floating around. And he put Nabu up to this investigation, but that wouldn't make any sense because Alensky is, or he was the person that just a couple of months ago wanted to dissolve Nabu because of this investigation. So that theory doesn't pan out. He wanted to dissolve Nabu because he heard they were investigating Mindich and this scandal, and then he tried to fold Nabu under his administration. So I don't think he's actually going after Mindich in the way that he went after Alensky, in the way that he went after Kolomoisky. I don't think he's turning on Mindich in that way. Mindich introduced Alensky to Kolomoisky, who's now in jail in Kiev, awaiting trial for embezzlement and fraud charges after being arrested by Security Service of Ukraine in 2023. Get this. According to Nabu, Mindich was tipped off and fled to Israel prior to being charged in the energy case. The agency is now investigating who might have alerted him. Oh, this whole thing is messy. This operation from Nabu has the title Operation Midas. It involved 1,000 hours of wiretapping and resulted in the seizure of bags of cash. And Mindich in Ukraine, he has the nickname of, I believe his nickname is Zelensky's wallet, right? I believe that's the guy's nickname in Ukraine. That's what the Ukraine media uses to refer to Mindich, Zelensky's wallet. 100 million. This is all over 100 million. You know, when you think about it, 100 million for Alensky is nothing, man. It's peanuts. He doesn't even get up out of bed for 100 million. When you consider the hundreds and hundreds of billions that have poured into Ukraine, unaudited, unaccounted, hundreds and hundreds of billions that have gone into the black hole that is Ukraine. And now we have this scandal over $100 million, which is nothing for Alensky. It's probably nothing for his buddies either. $100 million. Which leads me to believe that a lot of this is a distraction. Usually in Greece, when stuff like this happens, I've learned that in Greece, when you have these types of investigations for amounts that for the globalist political elite are really not that much for us. Obviously for me and you, for me, 100 million is, that's it, man. I'm done. I'm retiring, man. I'm going to live on an island and retire. No, wait a minute. I already am on an island. But anyway, you know, 100 million for these guys is nothing, man. It's nothing. Usually stuff like this in Greece when they have these types of things going on. It's usually to distract away from the big kickbacks and the big corruption that is taking place. So you set up a smaller type of investigation with smaller amounts of money. You throw some people under the bus. Unfortunately, we got to throw some people under the bus. Sorry, bro, but that's the way the cookie crumbles. And that way you distract away from whatever you're trying to distract away from. Usually you're distracting away from much, much bigger amounts of money that is being disappeared. That's usually how these things work. But I could be completely wrong about this. By the way, Alensky is looking for $140 billion in Russian frozen assets. And some reports are claiming that Alensky actually wants $250 billion and he needs it by February. He is urging allies, according to Bloomberg. He is urging his allies for new funds. And the thinking was that Ukraine has until April. Well, now Alensky is signaling that, you know what? Forget about April. I need the money by February. So what could be happening here? Another theory that I have is that maybe this is all about opposition parties and warring oligarch factions, and they're just trying to position themselves so that they can be on the receiving end of what could be one last big final collective West payday to Ukraine, right? So you have stories about Zaluzhny and Nord Stream. That could be Alensky going after Zaluzhny. And you have stories about this 100 million kickback. That could be the Zaluzhny faction with Poroshenko and Klitschko. They could be the ones going after Alensky and his crew on that end. And maybe you're seeing just a bunch of very powerful politicians and oligarchs just going after each other in order to position themselves for when a big payday comes in from the collective West. Anyway, it's beyond freaking messy, man. It is beyond freaking messy. But you know, that's the Western values, human rights, democracy that is Ukraine, right? That's what they've told us. Ukraine is the example of human rights and democracy and collective West values. There you have it. There you have it. By the way, Ukraine has called off talks with Russia. This is according to, I believe, their deputy foreign minister. He gave an interview to the UK Times. And in this interview, he said that there are no more peace talks taking place between Russia and Ukraine. Those are over. And then he also told the UK Times that during the negotiations that were taking place, the Russians' goal was to anger the Ukraine negotiating team. And then when the Ukraine negotiating team would exit the negotiations because of the insults that they received from the Russian side, then Russia would blame the Ukraine side for exiting the negotiations, for sabotaging the negotiations. Oh, those devious Russian negotiators. What a devious plan. We're gonna go into the negotiation. Guys, we're gonna go into the negotiation with the Ukraine team, and we're going to mock them and make fun of them and insult them. And then when they leave insulted and angered by all the bad words and names that we call them, then we're going to go to the media, who's very friendly to us, the Collective West Media, right? We're going to go to the BBC and the Washington Post and the New York Times, who absolutely love us as Russia and the Russian negotiating team. They absolutely love us, and they will post anything that we tell them. We're going to go to them and say, you know what, Ukraine, they sabotaged the negotiations. Yeah, that was the plan. Okay, man. Stupid stuff, man. Stupid stuff. Well, the negotiations between Ukraine and Russia look like they're finally done. At least that's how it looks at the moment. The UK actually tried to establish some back channel communications with Russia. That was revealed yesterday as well. the national security guy for the Starmer administration, Jonathan Powell. Not Jerome Powell, but Jonathan Powell. He tried to contact Russia. Actually, he successfully contacted Russia. And basically, his goal was to present the united position of the UK and the EU as far as terms go for the conflict in Ukraine, for negotiating an end to the conflict in Ukraine. And the reason that the UK set up this back channel is because they wanted to get ahead of Trump and his negotiations with Russia. So they wanted to establish some sort of channel with the Putin administration to preempt Trump and his diplomacy. And they wanted to get their position across to Russia. And Peskov, he admitted to all of this. He actually said in a statement, yeah, the UK actually contacted this Powell guy, actually contacted Ushakov. And basically it went nowhere. And it went nowhere, according to Peskov, because the UK, they told us their position and they told us their terms and their demands, but they didn't listen to our position. And so we just said, buzz off, man. We're not interested to talk to you guys because you don't want to talk to us. You want to dictate to us. On Wednesday, Peskov confirmed that contact between the two sides had taken place, but said it did not continue because there was no mutual exchange of opinions. During the contact, the British representative showed a strong desire to present the European position, but there appeared to be no intention or desire to listen to ours, he said. There you have it. Peskov also said that Russia is ready for any EU military action. So I talked about that yesterday, how the EU continues to talk about preparing for some sort of a military conflict with Russia in 3 to 4 years. And Peskov has addressed that. And he said there are clear militaristic moods in the West, and that is bad. But we have always known this risk existed and have taken all necessary measures in advance to safeguard our interests and security. Those necessary measures go by the name of Poseidon and Oreshnik and all of these measures. These are the measures that Russia has taken. A lot of creative people on the beaches in Larnaca. What is that? What is that? It's got some sort of a, it's even got some sort of a water sewage system. Anyway, let's see. So that's that story. Rubio is in Canada for the G7 ministers meeting. The great seven, the G7, the great economies of the world, the G7. Of course, at this meeting in Canada is the Ukrainian foreign minister, because when we're talking about the great seven, how can you not include Ukraine? The great eight meeting in Canada. And Rubio was asked about what's going on in Venezuela, and he brushed it off. He was actually confronted, or at least he claims, the media claims, that the foreign minister of France, whose name is not very important, Noel something, something to something. Anyway, he approached Rubio and told Rubio, look, man, what you're doing in Venezuela is illegal and it's against international law. And Rubio told him to buzz off. Rubio said, we're going after narco terrorists. And you are our vassal, so suck it up. That's basically the reporting that we're getting from Reuters. What's really going on there, at least with regards to Venezuela, is that Rubio is there to dictate to the vassal countries of the G7 what the U.S. is planning to do in Venezuela. Now that you have the USS Ford in the Caribbean, in the region, I imagine that Rubio he's not briefing the vassals. What he's probably telling them is, this is what we're going to do, or this is what we're planning to do, and this is the narrative and the messages that you guys are going to put out there. This is what you guys are going to post on X. This is what you're going to post on the foreign ministry websites, and we'll let you know when the operation kicks off, or what we're going to be doing with the operation as it moves forward. But this is what you guys are going to say. Okay, And I'm sure all the vassals said, okay, yes, we're going to support you, United States, absolutely. Yes, these are the messages. Okay. Okay. You've given us our talking points. Thank you, sir. And I think that was what was discussed with regards to Venezuela. Rubio spoke to the media and he talked about Russia. And he was asked if he's having any communication with Lavrov, any recent communication with Lavrov. And he said he has not spoken to Lavrov in 1 month. But he said that the last time he spoke to Lavrov a month ago, he said there was the basic understanding between both of them that the two leaders of the two countries were not going to meet until they had something to discuss, right? So he said that. He also said that with regards to sanctions, the U.S. has pretty much hit its sanctions limit. Yeah, there's no more sanctions that the U.S. could do. He says we've placed the nuclear big sanctions on the Russian oil and energy companies, and we really don't have much more that we can do. He said that the EU can continue to sanction the shadow fleets. Shadow fleets. They're everywhere. Those shadow fleets. And the EU can go after some more shadow fleet tankers. But the United States can't do much else when it comes to sanctions. And when it comes to Ukraine's energy situation, Rubio admitted that their energy situation is very, very bad. But he actually said that, you know what? If we give Ukraine equipment, he said the Russian military destroys that equipment in a week. So that was an interesting admission from Rubio. Whatever we give Ukraine, he said the Russians destroy it in a week. So what can we really do there? By the way, Lavrov, he said that that Russia is open to meet to a meeting in Budapest. As long as there's something to discuss, root causes, right? If we're going to discuss root causes and take Russia's interests into consideration and try to resolve the conflict in a long-term, realistic way, he said that Russia's ready to meet in Budapest anytime, any place. Well, that place is Budapest, but anytime. That is what Lavrov said. And before we get to our clown world, we have a couple of more stories, quick stories. Laura Ingraham's interview with Trump, which I have not discussed on this channel. Fox News Laura Ingraham interviewed Trump a couple of days ago. It's getting late here and I'm having trouble speaking. It's been a long day. What a disaster interview from Trump, man. What a train wreck freaking interview from Trump. Man, was that a disaster interview from Trump with Fox News' Laura Ingraham. And we're talking about friendly fire here, right? This is Fox News. This is Laura Ingraham, who supports Trump. But you got to give her credit. She stuck to her talking points, to her beliefs, whether you agree with them or not. And she asked the tough follow-up questions. And then she got Trump. She demolished Trump in this interview. I don't know if that's what she was looking to do, but boy, did she demolish Trump. She asked him about the student visa, 600,000 Chinese student visas. And Trump's response to that was, and I'm summarizing, this is not a direct quote, but Trump's response to Laura Ingraham was that we need the foreign workers, we need the H-1B1, we need the student visas, we need all these things. Because number one, he said, if we don't give the student visas, then the Ivy League schools are going to close down. And Laura Ingraham's like, well, who cares? Anyway, he said, we don't want that. But then with the visas, with the working visas, Trump said that we need them to come in because our workers can't do these things, can't do these jobs that we need the foreigners to do. And Trump's example was we need foreigners to come into the United States so they can teach us to manufacture missiles. And Laura Ingraham said, well, how did we manufacture missiles before? And Trump was just, she caught Trump. That was bad, man. That was a bad look for Trump. A very, very bad look for America First and MAGA. And then Trump was saying, I created MAGA. You know, he was getting very panicky. He's like, I know what MAGA needs. I created MAGA. I know what MAGA needs. I know what MAGA wants. Don't you tell me about MAGA. I created MAGA. So he was getting very panicky. And then she asked him about the 50-year mortgage stuff, which is just, whoever thought of that, fire that person. But she asked him about it. And let me see if I have a quote. Yeah, Trump didn't want to hear it. Of the 50-year mortgage proposal, he said, it's not even a big deal. I mean, you know, you go from 40 to 50 years. And Ingram corrected him, from 30 to 50 years. Trump said, all it means is you pay less per month. You pay it over a longer period of time, Trump said. It's not like a big factor. It might help a little bit, but the problem was that Biden did this. Yeah, he kept on trying to blame Biden throughout the entire interview. But yeah, 40 to 50 years, hey, just pay a little bit longer, you know? If you get the loan at 30, you're going to pay it until you're 80. What's the big deal, right? According to Trump. He's completely out of touch, man. This interview showed that he is completely freaking out of touch, man. Anyway, he also sent a letter to the president of Israel, Herzog, and he is asking to pardon Netanyahu. And this was released by the president's office, Herzog's office. While I absolutely respect the independence of the Israeli justice system and its requirements, I believe that the case against Bibi, who has fought alongside me for a long time, including against the very tough adversary of Israel, Iran, is a political, unjustified prosecution. I hereby call on you to fully pardon Benjamin Netanyahu. That was released by Herzog, the president's office of Israel. They released Trump's letter to him, calling on him to pardon Netanyahu. Netanyahu, who faces charges of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust, which could land him in prison for 10 to 16 years, I believe. Anyway, let's do a clown world and we can wrap this video up. My God, this has been a long video. Let's wrap this sucker up. And for this clown world, we go to the UK as the sun sets here in Larnaca. And I'm going to grab a coffee and work to get this video up. This has been a bumpy video for some reason. Have not been speaking too eloquently today, but then again, I usually don't speak very eloquently. But anyway, today's clown world is the coup in the UK. Man, there is a coup in the UK, according to 10 Downing Street, according to 008 Keir Starmer. His office is saying that there is a coup, and that coup is amongst other Labour Party officials. The ringleader, according to Keir Starmer, is Wes Streeting, who I believe holds the health secretary position, if I'm not mistaken. But Wes Streeting, he's a name that comes up often as far as someone who could succeed 008 Keir Starmer. And 10 Downing Street is saying that there is a coup to remove Starmer because Starmer's just not popular, man. Come on, guys. How can you say that? Yeah, they're saying Starmer is doing too much damage to Labour and he needs to go, and there's some sort of palace intrigue and coup talk to remove 008 Keir Starmer. UK PM's team in bunker mode amid coup fears. Senior Labour figures are reportedly plotting to oust Keir Starmer. Yeah, the best part about this clown world is that Keir Starmer's administration is saying that because of the coup fears, they're now in bunker mode. What the hell is bunker mode? I don't know. I don't know what bunker mode is, but Keir Starmer is in it. I don't know what it is, but Keir Starmer's in it. Bunker mode. All right, everybody. There's a coup. There's a coup going on. It's time for bunker mode. Is that like the Alensky bunker mode? is that the same thing? Like when Alensky says he was in a bunker and some EU official, I forgot who it was, maybe it was Boris Johnson, I don't know, someone called him and said, we'll get you a fighter jet, we'll get you a plane out of there. And Alensky said, eh, I don't need plane, I don't need ride, I need bullets. Is that what Keir Starmer is in? He's in bunker mode? I don't know. I don't know what bunker mode is, but it doesn't sound too good, man. It doesn't sound too good at all. Anyway, there's a coup going on in the UK, which is just nonsense, man. It's nonsense. Bro, your approval rating is at like 2%, man. Step down. Step aside. Come on. And no one wants you in office. Not that the replacements from Labour are going to be any better, or from the Conservatives. Not like there's any better replacements, but Keir, come on. It's time for you to go. It's pretty obvious that it's time for you to go. There's no coup that is needed. You need to step down. Anyway, that's the clown world. That's the video. We're on Substack. Check us out on Substack. Alexander wrote a really good article the other day on Putin, actually, and the conflict in Ukraine. And exclusive to Substack, it is also exclusive to Locals, the Duran.locals.com. And we are also on Rumble, X, and Telegram. Like the video, subscribe to this channel, share this channel. I will see everybody mañana. Take care.